streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right. Welcome back in, everyone, to the Go247 podcast. I'm Glenn West, the senior writer at the site. Joined by Dylan Sanders, our contributing writer. You guys enter at your own volition here today. This is going to be a little bit of a different pod for us, coming off of a really disappointing loss for LSU in this regular season finale. The Tigers drop to Texas A&M in College Station, 38-23. We're going to get into some of the gruesome details of the game itself, but before we do that, just wanted to, again, remind you guys just to please hit the like button on YouTube. Please subscribe on YouTube and just wherever you guys get your podcasts from. That really helps us as we try to grow out our network. So that's just always appreciated. With that, you know, I think probably the bigger point we wanted to make now that this is, you know, almost a day, whenever you're really viewing this, it's probably around a day after LSU has dropped this this game and fallen 9-3. We just wanted to offer, I think, just some more overglowing perspective on this year and just kind of what the season has meant, at least in year one in our eyes. I think that was probably a bigger point of emphasis for us after watching that game last night. Look, LSU did not do a lot of things well on Saturday night against the Aggies. I think they were controlled in the trenches on both sides of the ball. Anybody who watched that game from start to finish could see that. There was a ton of momentum swings there that just didn't fall LSU's way in the second half. You know, LSU's been such a great second half team all year. Those adjustments didn't last for long, at least on the defensive side of the ball. Just, you know, pretty religiously getting attacked by Devon Achane and you know, the entire Aggies rushing attack. That was just not a great performance overall for the Tigers, but we do want to just offer some overglowing perspective here. And, you know, look, I think if you had kind of told me heading into this year, LSU would be in this position where they get to 9 wins. Not only did they get to 9 wins, but they get to play in the SEC championship game in year one under Brian Kelly. It's a scenario that I think most LSU fans, most people that follow this program pretty closely would have taken 10 times out of 10. And I think probably where some of the disappointment comes in is that this is probably a team that exceeded expectations. You know, I think we probably got a good glimpse of what the ceiling for this team is in that Alabama game and what the floor is for a game like last night. You know, it's just, you're never going to be as high as you were against Alabama. And I don't think you're ever going to be as low as you are against Texas A&M. Like there's a nice little mean there in the middle that LSU falls under. And it just so happens that, you know, it cost them a trip to the college football playoff, or at least to stay in that picture here in this game. But just, I thought it was important to really kick this thing off with a little bit of perspective on that. And just, you know, talking about this team as a whole, I think there were just so many great strides made this year with their younger players. You know, this was always going to be a multi-year rebuild, and I think LSU's gotten a huge jump start on it. We'll touch on, you know, how it's impacting recruiting and all that stuff. But really, the young talent on this team, I mean, you're seeing it right before your eyes with Harold Perkins and Will Campbell and Emory Jones, Mason Taylor, a lot of these freshmen and sophomores who are earning playing time so early in their career. That's just a really positive development that I don't think you probably would have seen, you know, kind of coming into this year. I didn't expect Mason Taylor to be the kind of big play tight end that he's become over the last several weeks. I didn't expect Will Campbell and Emory Jones to be some of the best offensive tackles in all of the SEC in their first year as you know, the starting tackles for this group. So just a lot of positives that you can take from this season as a whole. And I just thought it was important to add another layer here on just the importance of this season and what getting to 9-3, what competing in this game against Georgia next week means for the program in year one under Brian Kelly. But Dylan, I'll just throw it over to you just from your perspective, just the overlying you know, positives, negatives with this season, just kind of where are you sitting after watching that game last night?
Yeah, I mean, there are multiple times in this season where if you told me that we'd be sitting here doom and gloom, disappointed at 9-3, I would have been really, really shocked. You know, this miracle run, the way I put it last night was it's a worst case scenario into a best case scenario type of season. Realistically, yeah, I mean, going into the season, I said 7-5. And the reason that a lot of people are upset is because this team at times looked like it could be, you know, better than 9-3, better than 10-2 potentially, you know, like looking back at old games. It's not the end everyone wanted, but it is not the worst thing in the world that this team went 9-3. I think the blueprint has been set out for the future, and I think once this team really gets a chance to be built and be constructed the way Brian Kelly wants it to, I think that this regime did a lot more good than bad this year. They weren't perfect. I mean, obviously they lost 38-23 last night, but you know, like Matt House had a lot more ups than downs. Brian Polian grew throughout the year. Mike Denbrock definitely grew throughout the year. So if this is the trio of coordinators that runs it back next year, there are things to be excited about with this team. There are players that aren't for sure leaving that could come back, and then wow, you're excited for them next year. There are Mason Smiths coming back next year. There are freshmen that will play in this incredible recruiting class. Like, I think everything, I think 9 out of 10 things that you point to are positive from this season. It just sucks the way you lost and who you lost to end the season.
Yeah, I mean, we'll dive into the game a little bit here, but I just wanted to bounce off of that a little bit. I mean, not just the coordinators. Like, I think LSU is in a really good spot with a lot of their position coaches. I think they have some of the brightest young minds in all the game in terms of Jamar Cain, Robert Steeples.
Brad Davis,
Joe Sloan. I mean, like, they're set up, I think, for long-term success with the way that they go about their business. And you could really see the impact that guys like a Brad Davis had on that O-line group. I mean, this was a O-line group at the very beginning of the year, had no continuity, had zero chemistry. They were plugging and playing guys, you know, different lineups every week. They finally find some stability and they start growing together as a unit. And they've been one of the great success stories, I think, as the season's gone on the entire roster. They've been really consistent for you for most of the season, or at least as LSU's made this stretch here where they won 5 in a row and kind of vaulted themselves back into the national picture. So that's just extremely encouraging, and that's just one example. I mean, you could go down the line, Robert Steeples and the effect that he's had on some of the recruiting that LSU's right now in the mix for. Some of these transfers that came in and having them build that chemistry pretty quickly in the secondary and being a mostly reliable unit. I'll say that there's been some hiccups this year, but they've been a mostly reliable secondary for a group that was really just built back in January. I mean, this is, you look at, you know, some of all the players that are in the rotation right now for LSU, and those guys are, you know, transfer in and you had to learn the system, learn how to play with one another. And so, I think there's just a lot of really good positives you can take away from this season. And yeah, of course, it was disappointing watching this game last night. You know, just in a multitude of ways, LSU just didn't look like it was really well prepared, really well ready for this game. And I think that was probably the most disappointing, the most defeated and most disappointed that I've seen Brian Kelly after a game all season. I think he really was caught off guard by the way LSU performed, especially in the second half when LSU has been so great. But I wrote this in our 3 observations piece. You know, you start slow all these games and you keep coming back and you keep finding ways to win and claw yourselves back into these games. But If you play with fire long enough, it could burn you. And that's, I think, what happened to LSU in the second half. It looked like they were right on the cusp of getting themselves back into this game and taking control with the back-to-back stops to open the third quarter and the touchdown there to start the third quarter as well. And then you have the Jaden Daniels fumble that was returned for a touchdown. You have the third down penalty there, the catch that wasn't a catch for Jeray Jenkins there at the end of the game. I mean, just a lot of things didn't go LSU's way in the second half. And some of it was them just beating themselves. And I think that was probably the most surprising thing, at this point in the season for Brian Kelly and for that LSU coaching staff to swallow. But when you look at this game, Dylan, I mean, just where, I think I know where the big turning point was, but just what was the series of plays or the turning point here for LSU and how they lost this game?
Well, I want to point to one very misleading statistic that I noticed last night, is that the time of possession was only a three-minute difference in favor of Texas A&M. They controlled the pace and the clock of this game from the jump. That very first 15-play, 90-yard drive really set the tone for the game. And while LSU had some long, sustained drives of their own, I would say it didn't play into how LSU needed this game to play out. And they with their initial short drive led to that 15 play drive, really just from the jump made this game seem like, oh no, this is not going to be good. And it wasn't good. And then, they kind of got back into it. And then of course the fumble really just felt like it was a one score game, but it really felt like it sealed it. Like, yeah. You're like, oh wow, this game's over. Like, it was just that kind of play.
Yeah. I tweeted it out after it happened, and I just simply said, like, anything can happen now. I mean, that was such a momentum swing in A&M's favor, because I mean, LSU had all of the momentum on that when they were starting that drive. I mean, I think you could go back and look at that game and say that was absolutely the big deciding factor in all of this. I mean, what you mentioned about the plays is really interesting. It wasn't just a 15-play drive. It was a 12-play drive that followed, a 9-play drive that followed after that, that both led to points for A&M on offense. The second half, they had two 8-play scoring drives as well. That led to points. And so, like, that's a lot of on-field time for the defense. Like, you could tell those guys were gassed by the end of that game. And it's really a credit to A&M. I think they did a fantastic job on their offensive line of pushing those guys back. You know, there was really no pressure in the second half on Connor Wegman and in getting into the backfield to stop A-Chain. I mean, he was a one-man wrecking crew with his 215 yards on 38 carries. It was just a really lopsided performance that we really haven't seen this LSU front seven get thoroughly blasted like that.
Yeah, allowing 6 yards a carry on 38 attempts is just absurd.
Yeah, and they were all, like, I wouldn't say they were easy runs, but they were runs where A-Chain was – like, he had so much room to navigate, and he's such a speedy and twisty receiver or running back. He can just really get into the grooves of your line if you're not gap sound. And you saw that. I mean, he was just really running rampant on this LSU team and really consistently getting into the second level.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control all desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Yeah, and it just felt so uncharacteristic for this team, because they had handled the lead back so well. And then A-Chain coming off of an injury, not at 100%. There were questions if he was even going to play. And then he did play, and he played very well and ran all over the defense. And it really just seemed like a worst case scenario kind of night. You know, I mentioned it on Twitter. It kind of, you know, it feels like it. But the NCAA a couple years ago tried to force this into a rivalry. LSU, Texas A&M, you know, everyone's like, well, what happened to Arkansas? Why aren't we playing them rivalry? They forced this one. And through many a years now, a bunch of annoying games, I feel like they've succeeded. I feel like these two schools don't like each other at all.
I don't think these two like each other. And I think these games have proven that this is a legit rivalry. Like,
this is close. I mean, it's back and forth. You really never know what's going to happen. It's always going to be something weird.
LSU controlled this series for the first, you know, 6 or 7 years when A&M got into the conference. That 7 overtime game, it's hard to look at as a game that didn't really start to turn the tide and make this a real rivalry back in 2018. And really since then, it's been back and forth. I think they have equal amount of wins since that 2018 game. It's just a – It's one of those games now that I think if you're looking at a 9-game schedule for the SEC and you're looking for 3 permanent teams, I don't know how A&M is not on the list for LSU every year. I think that's a opponent you can certainly check off as a one that the conference would love to see every year.
Yeah, it's really worked out in the SEC's favor. Yeah. Ever since the 7 overtime game, it's been something weird and, you know, something you can't count on the A&M win like you could for many years at the start.
Yeah.
Like they obviously didn't play every year, but there was like a 20-year gap in between Texas A&M beating LSU and vice versa.
Yeah.
But yeah, now it's crazy. Even last year, LSU was one on a crazy last play. Like,
yeah, and A&M had something to play for. I mean, we talked about it last week. They were on the cusp of a potential New Year's Six Bowl with that win, and now it's kind of funny that only a year later, it's the other team that's dashing the other team's hope of getting into a New Year's Six or a college football playoff appearance. So,
I mean, yeah, it speaks to Brian Kelly's message of the SEC is hard to win game. It's hard to win in the SEC. And I think this really just proves it. I mean,
as A&M built out that lead, I went back and I grabbed the quote that Kelly had at the very beginning of this week. And it was something that stood out to me on Monday. And it certainly stood out to me in the second half of watching that unfold. You don't want to be around this team when they figure it out. And you could see that was an A&M team that started to figure itself out offensively. They were healthier. You know, Wegman really seemed comfortable in what was his fourth start. So he was hitting Evan Stewart and Muhammad, this guy Muhammad.
Moose Muhammad out of nowhere making
a legacy game or something. I mean, he
crazy, crazy plays.
Yeah, just
Sage Ryan didn't even play those balls horribly.
No.
It was just in absurd bad luck and crazy catches by Moose. Catch,
I mean, if anything, I thought Ryan was going to get flagged for a PI there if he didn't get the touchdown catch, because he was pretty locked in with him and he looked like he was grabbing his right arm, and so he just stuck out his left and made the catch. But yeah, let's just shift maybe offensively, just touch on the offense a little bit for LSU. You know, my personal opinion didn't really look great. I mean, I thought they were able to open up some running lanes for Jaden. I tweeted this out at the very start of the game. It just felt like it was a game where LSU was going to have to really rely on Daniel's legs. And they did for a time. I mean, he had 84 yards rushing on the ground. He was pretty consistently moving the sticks on those nice long drives in the first half. It was great to see John Emery have a little bit of a bounce back game with his 3 touchdowns and almost 60 yards on the ground. So there were some positives there in the run game, but the offensive line just didn't hold up very well last night, I thought, especially in the passing game. You know, Jaden was flushed out of the pocket a lot quicker than maybe he had been earlier in these previous, you know, 3-4 games. And he just wasn't hitting the passes like he was earlier this year for that stretch run. Just didn't think it was the offense's most efficient night. The fumble certainly turned things around. I mean, that was the game changer, I think, in everyone's eyes. But yeah, I mean, after that, though, I mean, even the penalties that you got on that next drive that cost you a potential third down conversion on a first down play, instead of looking at third and six, you're looking at third and 16, and you're not able to move that drive on the very next one, and you force a punt, and A&M goes down and scores a touchdown and pretty much puts the game away. So some really inefficient offense, I thought, in the second half. They just weren't able to match what they did in the first half. And it was just the kind of game plan that A&M drew up. I mean, they wanted this to be a clock, you know, management issue, or clock controlling the clock kind of game for them. And LSU kind of got sucked in a little bit, I think, to that kind of strategy, and they weren't able to make enough plays down the stretch. What were your thoughts offensively?
Yeah, I mean, Daniels made some nice throws. Obviously, yeah, runs. I agree with a lot of what you said, but you know, it was really scary for a second there. Both of Jaden's injuries looked like they were going to be way worse than they were. Yeah. It made very little sense to me going for the 2-point conversion with a hobbled quarterback. That was the oddest. It really didn't. I agree. It didn't look like the smoothest offensive game, but it didn't until that fumble. It really felt like, okay, well, they'll be able to get something done. Like they had a little bit of a few moments of fluidity, and they looked like they could get the rhythm going. I thought, you know, as soon as, you know, 17-7, they got the ball back and could take the lead.
Yeah.
It went immediately from that to 38-17. And then in the
span of like six minutes. I mean, it was an onslaught from there. And as soon as A&M grabbed just the slightest bit of momentum, and that was like the pinnacle moment of momentum that they could absolutely hope for, the crowd was just into it for the rest of the game. I mean, I think that you saw LSU come out of the third quarter and really shut the crowd down early with its stops and with the touchdown. That fumble, I mean, it was off to the races from there. It was pretty loud in that stadium from pretty much the end of that game on. And you could tell they took advantage of the momentum and they didn't relinquish control. So I think it was just a game that was defined by a couple of mistakes from LSU, a couple of, execution was not there. That was something that Coach Kelly mentioned after the game. Just he didn't have much of an answer for why LSU looked the way that it did, for how they just didn't look like themselves for a lot of that part of the second half, and it really hurt them. It just hurt them down the stretch. So, you know, with that, I think we could probably turn it over to maybe a little bit of Georgia talk. I think, you know, the biggest thing now that you want to see from this group is for them to flush this, put in as great a week of work of prep as you can hope for, and enter this game with you know, the same level of confidence that you did earlier this year in a game of like Alabama, for example, or Ole Miss. You know, you want to see that energy, and that was something that Coach Kelly said was lacking in the last 24 hours of this last weekend's game. That was the other thing that I wanted to bring up was, there was a little bit of a letdown in terms of their guard, in terms of their energy level on that Friday before the game, the 24 hours before kickoff, that Coach Kelly could kind of sense. And LSU just can't afford to let that happen again. They've got to be extremely well prepared for this Georgia team if they want to have a chance of hanging tight with these guys. Georgia is number one for a reason. They're one of the best defenses again in the country. They're extremely good against the run, really, really solid against the pass as well. But there's some avenues here to success for LSU, which we'll get into later down the week. Just early thoughts on Georgia, Dylan, just the mindset, the focus, the intensity that needs to be there in order to be able to compete with these guys.
You know, I, like an idiot, was thinking that this game was, you know, going to be closer than it might end up being, you know, depending on how LSU responds. But, you know, it's – Georgia has stumbled throughout the season. They recover usually because they have
really good
team. The old Shane Beamer quote of how many five stars they have on each side of the ball. It's just absurd.
Or the Marcus Spears post-it note thing. There's a five star. There's a five star.
Their team's really, really good, and they're coached really, really well. So it's going to be hard. It's not impossible, though. Georgia has shown weaknesses, so LSU really does need to just lock in, and maybe this is the kick that they needed for this year and years on. You know, this team has been through a lot. They were, you know, they fought through adversity, so maybe we thought, okay, they've been through the ringer. They know not to overlook anybody, but it sounds like they did. And this is maybe just what the players that are coming back next year needed to know, that, you know, you just can't do that. It doesn't matter. If you're playing against a team that's not going to be making a bowl game in the last game of the year, and you give up 40 points, something went wrong. So they need to take a look at themselves this week and really, figure out what went wrong in preparation. But, you know, Georgia is good. Stetson Bennett, forever the most underrated player in the country. Like, he is a really good quarterback.
He's a really good college quarterback, yeah.
Really good college quarterback. Yeah, specify college quarterback.
I mean, like, there is a difference,
yeah.
You can be a really good college quarterback and just not have much of an impact in the next level, because that's just part of it. You know, that's just,
yeah, but you know, and not, you know, he's better than
1% of the 1%. So
yeah, he's what, like 26 years old. He's up there. He's a veteran. He's a leader. He's a leader. And he is, yeah, he's the postman. Yeah. He's good. George is good. I don't know how what else you need to know. They're good. They can run the ball. They can throw the ball. They can sack you. They can intercept you. They can force you to fumble. You just have to bring your A game. That's about it. If LSU plays like they played against Alabama, they could absolutely be in this game.
I agree.
The defenses have been able to figure out Georgia a little bit this year, until the end of the game they break against the talent barrier. But it's possible. It's going to be a lot harder, just from a confidence level. You have to believe you're going to beat them to be able to beat them. So
yeah,
it's just going to be harder.
The one thing I'll add, especially offensively, is Brock Bowers is a dog. Like, they better have a good scheme for Brock Bowers, the tight end for Georgia, because he will absolutely cook LSU if they're not careful. So
you mean Mason Taylor Light, according to Brian Kelly this year, earlier this year?
I don't think he called him Mason. I don't think he called him Brock Bowers, but he said
he'll be like that quarter, that tight end from Georgia. Was, I think, his exact quote.
All right. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean he's Mason Taylor Light. It was one of the.
No, that's what I'm reading through the lines. That's what Brian Kelly meant.
Yeah, that was one of the more interesting BK quotes we've heard this year for sure. I was a little thrown off by that one. But, so look, we'll be back in the middle of the week to preview this game. We'll have boots on the ground in Atlanta for LSU's SEC championship quest. And look, I think just a parting thought here, you still have something to play for this year if you're LSU. This is a great opportunity to build some momentum heading into next year. And what is probably going to be a team that returns a lot of its key starters. I mean, I think that there's a argument to be made that this LSU team is going to have a lot of familiar faces around the building back in this rotation next year. And so whatever kind of momentum that you can build, confidence you can build heading into that offseason, it's only going to help this program. And, with that, we'll certainly keep you guys in the loop of what's going on throughout this week. They've got a lot of press conferences, a lot of interviews scheduled with Kelly and the players. So we'll have all that content for you at Go247. But until then, we'll catch you guys later.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe.
I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm going to play this game for speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.